Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Tina S., a compulsive overeater from Florida. Welcome, Tina.
Thanks so much, Donna. Hi, I'm Tina, recovered compulsive eater and anorexic, and I live in Florida. And thanks, Jessica, also for asking, talking with me. Anyway, it's always it's an honor and a privilege to speak in a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. It really, truly is. I usually start by saying, I'm 65 years old, and I didn't think I was going to live to see 30. And I'm so grateful, so very, very grateful for the 12 steps. So very grateful. Saved my life, gave me a life. I like to also start with in how it works. It says that we share in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. So I'm going to try and do that. I was born in Pennsylvania. I'm the second of four kids. Growing up, my mother was in and out of mental institutions all my life. And, I don't really remember a whole lot about my early childhood. I do remember that there came a time, I'm a second of three girls. And I have a sister who is 11 months older, and I have another sister who is 3 years younger. And my mother used to dress us as triplets, back in the day. And but I do remember that there came a time when she could not find the outfit to fit me, to match my sister's outfits. And, I felt very sad about that. Didn't understand why, nothing like that. I knew that, there was something about this food thing. Didn't really know what that was, but what I just knew was the consequences of, me being overweight and having to buy clothes at different stores and couldn't get the cute little outfits that my sister got. And, and I was really hurt by that. And probably what I did, like I said, because I don't really remember back then, probably what I did was just ate some more, just ate some more because did not understand. I thought they were prettier and smarter, and everything meant everything was great if you were thin, today I know that to be different, but that's what I felt when I was younger. And, I remember growing up and just, kind of not feeling like I fit in, something was different. Didn't know what it was, but it was something. Something was different. I in grade school, I remember, being young, and we used to have these little, candy boxes where they'd sell candy. And any kind of money I had, I was buying candy. I was just buying it all, and I was eating it all. I remember coming home from school, and my mother wasn't much when she was sick. She wasn't much of a cook, so I'd eat whatever was there, and all of whatever it was that I opened, I would eat it all, always, And I can remember when I was like in grade school, we had, had boyfriends, whatever that meant back in grade school. But I picked my boyfriend by who bought the best candy, who bought me the best candy. We used to walk around the football field, but if he bought me, whoever bought me candy, I was walking with them, And, that's just the way I did things, whatever I could get from you, then it made me feel okay. Somehow it made me feel okay, because I never thought that I was okay. And then I started playing sports. And, I was really good at academics, and I was really good at sports. So when I started playing sports, it wasn't so much about the weight anymore, because I could be a normal weight. But I was crazy in my head. That's what food did to me. It made me crazy in my head. Do I eat it? Don't I eat it? How do I not eat it? How do I get it? Where do I get it? Who do I get it from? All that stuff. It was a constant chatter in my head about food. And that's what I remember today. And I'm just so grateful that's not my life today, but it was back then. And also, you know, because, you know, it's my story. One of my first diets was alcohol. I'm also a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, 30 years sober. And you know, and I really had to get sober first because food was my core addiction, you know. And so if I didn't get sober, that I was never going to address this. But, you know, I came, I was probably, I don't know, I graduated from high school and I went to, I got accepted to this hospital school of nursing and, you know, and I went in at a normal weight. You know, a lot of my stuff was, you know, I would start at a normal weight, you know, because I thought this, you know, I always had arrived when I became, when I went, it was a normal weight or I thought I looked good, you know. And so I started a nursing school. You know, at the time I was like, I'm 5'4 and 120 some pounds. And, you know, I thought I looked good. It was great, you know, and I went to school and, you know, how I dealt with anything, I guess, was eat, because once I started in this nursing program and, you know, and I was one of the top students in my class, but I started to gain weight, you know, I would study and, you know, eat while I was studying, you know, and I can remember I gained like 30 pounds in, I don't know, 4 months, something like that. And then, you know, what food did to me, it was like, it made me really depressed. You know, I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to see anybody. I just wanted to be by myself. And not that I always would eat by myself, but I didn't think that I deserved to be among people, I guess. So at this point, when I started to gain weight, you know, I quit school. You know, I just quit school. Something had to go. So school had to go. And then, you know, I worked with my dad and, you know, and I just did things just to make money to either eat or drink. You know, that's part of what I did. And, you know, like I said, booze was one of my first diets because if I would drink, I wouldn't eat. But then, you know, I was a blackout drinker and I was a blackout eater. And so there were periods of time where I could, you know, gain 20 pounds, gain 30 pounds, lose 30 pounds, lose 35, gain 30. You know, my highest weight was 165 pounds. And actually, I was 160 pounds when I was in fifth grade. And so, you know, I got really depressed when my dad died in 1985 and me and him were very, very close. And I got really depressed, you know, and my sister told me maybe I should go see a counselor or something. So, you know, I was going because, I wanted this perfect pill. You know, I can remember going to this counselor and I was in the waiting room and they had this magazine I was reading. And it was when Prozac first came out. And my perception of what Prozac did for you in depression was that it helped you lose weight. So I remember going into this counselor's office and telling him that I probably needed to be on this pill, you know, because this is what, you know, my diagnosis of my depression or whatever was going on with me. And when I left there, somehow I was told that I probably should go to Alcoholics Anonymous and Overeaters Anonymous. How that happened, I couldn't tell you. But what did come from that, and that was back in 1987, I made an appointment with a therapist in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I had to wait 2 weeks to see her. And this was a woman that this was for my eating disorder. And I had to wait 2 weeks to see her. And when I did see her, she had just came back from a hospital in Tampa, Florida, and it was an eating disorder clinic. A treatment center. And so within 2 weeks, I was in Tampa, Florida, and I was in a treatment center for alcoholism and food addiction. And that was the first time I was introduced to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they gave us a big book. You know, we had all these instructions. We had all these groups and, you know, and I didn't have a clue what was going on. I just really didn't have a clue. All I wanted was to be thin. You know, I didn't want to learn anything out of a book. You know, and I didn't want to get spiritual. I didn't want any of that stuff. I just wanted to be thin. And I thought if I were thin, everything would be okay. And I also wanted to be able to eat three meals a day. You know, I can remember thinking, I don't ever remember eating three meals a day because I was either always eating all day or I wasn't eating nothing. You know, and so when I went into this treatment center, they made the food for us. We had, you know, they gave us a scale. We had measuring cups and, you know, We had this food plan we had to follow, and they prepared the food and we ate it. And I can remember, when I went into this treatment center, I weighed 124 pounds. I was a normal weight. And I was there for about 6 weeks. And I never went to those groups. Like I said, I was an athlete. So when at this was a hospital treatment center, and they had a basketball court and they had a track, and so I was always outside. I was never missed at any of these groups somehow, and I was in Florida, so I was one for at this time I was how old was I back then? 87, I don't know, 30, 31. And I loved laying out. So that's what I did, for almost 6 weeks. And nobody ever knew that I didn't attend any of these groups. So I left this treatment center with a food plan, and I had lost 7 pounds. I thought this was the ticket. I just had this diet. I was good to go. Well, what I can tell you is that, abstinence is not a diet. It's not a diet. It just really isn't. And I didn't know anything about the Big Book. I went to a couple meetings, and I didn't understand anything. And because I thought I knew everything, I wasn't able to listen to anybody tell me anything. So it was probably less than 9 months when I started diet, because I was eat like I said, I was either a binger or a dieter. So I started dieting the food plan, and then I started to be get really anorexic. And then when I was like 90 some pounds, and I couldn't think, it was just a crazy thing. And so then I just started to eat, because if I would eat and it would feed my brain, I would start to be able to think. And I always prided myself on my intellect. Yeah, how smart we are. But anyway, and then I just played around for in my abs I forgot to say this, my abstinent date is July the 5th, 1999. So, I first came to OA in 1987. So I think what is there like 12 years difference. So for about 12 years, I played this Russian roulette game with food. I did get sober in 1987, and I didn't drink for like 4 years, and then I drank for a while, and then I was back in the food and the booze, and then in 1993, I got sober. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, with my eating, I was, like I said, I'm either, 30 pounds overweight or I'm 30 pounds underweight. At this point, when I got sober, I started to be really thin, and people thought I was, thought that I had cancer. They thought I had AIDS. They didn't know what was wrong with me. But, my network in Alcoholics Anonymous got me again to another treatment center in 1999. And when I went to this, it was an outpatient treatment center. And again, I was introduced to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had already worked the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I knew all about the Big Book. But I didn't, I just thought, God, that, I should be able to just take care of that food thing. That was just a little thing, But what I can tell you is food was my absolute drug of choice. It just was. And I didn't know that at the time. So when I went back into treatment, and again, I was like, at that point, I think I was 94 pounds. I couldn't think. And when I would be anorexic, I couldn't put like a sentence together in my mind. People would like talk around me and for me. And I could not, I could remember thinking to myself, I wasn't always like this, because I was like really, academically, I was pretty smart. But in my anorexia, I couldn't think. And I think that's where I needed to be, because all I did was I can remember every morning I would get on my knees. And I don't think that I prayed, but that was just a part of my routine of what I did. Because when I first started working the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what I did in the morning. I asked God to keep me sober, and at night I would thank him. So that was just part of a routine. And then I was in this treatment center, and we started working out the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And first of all, I had to have a food plan. I had to follow a food plan. At this point, I had to gain like 35 pounds, and I was not happy. I was not happy to have to eat all this food. But then there came a point when I got to my goal weight. I had to cut back on the food. Then I wasn't happy that I had to cut back on the food. But what came from, working the steps in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I have an allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. On page 133 in the Big Book, it says that we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free. And I didn't know how to do that. And I came to the rooms and I saw people that were happy, joyous, and free. And what they did, what they said to me, Tina, is if you do what we do, you know, you can get what we got. You know, so I started just do what people did in Overeaters Anonymous. Like I said, they had a sponsor, they sponsored people, they had a food plan, they followed a food plan, you know, they worked out of the big book, they went to meetings, they helped others. And I didn't want to do any of this stuff, but I did. You know, I didn't want to be miserable in the disease. So, you know, I can remember going through the steps, and you know, and the doctor's opinion, you know, where it talks about the allergy. You know, I thought this was a big excuse what people in Overeaters Anonymous were, you know, they were just saying they had this allergy, you know. But today I know that there are certain foods that I cannot put in my body. If I do, I will want more for sure. And you know, I may not eat more, but I will want more because it will set off that phenomenon of craving, you know. So today what I do is I don't put that in my body, you know. But again, you know, that's the physical part of this disease. I also have a mental, because my mind will tell you, oh, Tina, you're all better now. You're all better now. You can eat that stuff. Look, you're a normal weight. You've been a normal weight for a long time, you know. So what takes care of that, the mind, is the 12 steps. You know, I have to have a spiritual awakening, a psychic change. I have to be different. You know, they tell me the same person will eat again. That's the truth. You know, so I have to be different. And how that happens is by working the 12 steps. And for me, it's out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in Overeaters Anonymous, we have many workbooks. We have the 12. I've done the steps in all of those. I've done them in a workbook. I've done them out of the 12 and 12. But I prefer the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's short. I mean, it's not short. It's direct. It has specific directions. It tells me exactly what I need to do. And if I do what it says, if I read the black and not in between, you know, I can get the promises. You know, step one, you know, I'm totally powerless over certain foods and I cannot put them in my body. You know, and my life is unmanageable by me for sure. You know, me managing my life got me in several 12-step programs. So today, you know, what I do know is if I stay in step one, I will be powerless forever. You know, the solution is steps 2 through 12. You know, and step two came to believe that a power greater than herself can restore us to sanity. I didn't think I was crazy. And I didn't want to believe, you know, and I would, again, you know, I didn't come here to believe in no God. You know, I was raised Catholic, but I didn't come here to get a relationship with a God. What happened was I stayed long enough that I wanted to have a relationship with a power greater than myself. You know, on page 45, it talks about lack of power is my dilemma, you know, and that we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. And then it says, and that's exactly what this book is about. That's the object of this book, is to help me to find a power greater than myself so I can be free of this disease one day at a time. You know, and you know, and step three, you know, I made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. You know, I thought, how, you know, will and life, wow, that sounded really big to me, you know. But the simple, direct definition of will and life is our thoughts and our actions. And I could turn over my thoughts and my actions to a power greater than myself, whatever that, if that was, you know, even if it was the group. You know, even if it was a group, the group, anybody, my sponsor would tell me, Tina, anybody but you, doesn't matter who it is or what it is, as long as it's not you. You know, so I made that decision. And they also told me it was just to make a decision to go on with the rest of the steps, you know, and see what happens. You know, go on with the rest of the steps and see what happens. You know, and so I did step four. You know, and you know, I did the, and I followed it out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It gives me specific instructions on how to do the four step. And I thought it was this big, scary thing, but I, you know, I had specific instructions. You know, I just made a list of all these people, and I did a second column, I did a third column, I did a fourth column, and then I did step five. You know, and the reason I did step five, I think, is where into action. It talks about, you know, the best reason we do this step is because if we skip it, we may not overcome drinking. And that's why I did it. And that's why I did it. You know, I didn't want to take that chance. You know, so I let somebody else know who I was. And it was a gift. Because I shared my four step with somebody, and they let me stay, and they actually were, going like this, and telling me, yeah, did that, did that, did that too, so I wasn't so unique, we all do similar things, today, and I wasn't alone anymore, and I think that was the biggest thing. I wasn't alone anymore. And step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. By the time I did step five, I was ready to have these defects of character removed. Now, wait a day, that might be a different story. But right when I'm giving you all my four-step stuff, I'm ready to be over that. I don't want to be that same person. And a sponsor told me, Tina, you don't have to be that same person anymore. But you can be, but you don't have to be. And so I continued on with the steps, and step seven, humbly ask God to remove these defects of character, and I do that on a daily basis, because let me just tell you, I think that, like the layers of the onion, there are some character defects that aren't as bad as they used to be, and step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I made a list. I got with a sponsor and got some direction on how to make these amends. And I didn't want to do a lot of that stuff. But I had some great results. And I always tell this story because it's the truth. When I moved to Florida, after I went to treatment, I thought, this is where it was at. I got abstinent initially and sober in Florida. So I moved down here. Now, that was in 1987 and 1988 when I moved down. And again, my abstinent date is 1999. So I drank in Florida and I ate in Florida too. And I also went to jail. I did a lot of stuff that, I didn't have to do if I'd have stayed sober and abstinent in 1987. Of course, that's not my story. But when I first was doing my did my A step, and I was going to do my ninth step. A lot of my amends were in Pennsylvania because that's where I'm from, and I had this great plan. I was flying to Pennsylvania. I was going to make all these amends, and I was told after the fact that, I just become willing to make the amends. God presents the opportunity, because when I got there, nobody was available, so I wasn't able to make any of the amends that I thought that I was. Because I thought I was going to get them all taken care of, But, I became willing, and God has presented the opportunity, and I've been able to make those amends. And I had some financial amends. I thought, oh, I'll never be able to make those. Because, one of my things was my MO. What I did was I moved from Pennsylvania to Florida, and I thought, ah, all those bills in Pennsylvania, they could stay there. Well, let me tell you, they find you no matter where you go. I worked at a pharmacy, and it was right when I was ready doing my nine step amends. I get it. My name is Tristina. I go by Tina, but my name is Tristina. And I worked in the pharmacy, and I get a phone call, and it's for Tristina. So if anybody's looking for Tristina, something's up, because I go by Tina. And it was a creditor. But what happened was, I was on my ninth step, and I was able to set up payments. I think that was back in the 80s. So I was like maybe $10 a month, but I was able to pay off all my creditors. That's what this program, that's what the 12 steps does, and I did the ninth step, and then I continue to take personal inventory, on a daily basis, because when these crop up, not if, when, because they're gonna, they do, they crop up, but I'm able to take care of it. There's five simple steps in a 10th step. Initially, I figure out what it is. I'm selfish, dishonest, resentful, frightened. I ask God to remove it at once. I discuss it with somebody. I make amends if need be. And the kicker is, I turn my thoughts to helping others. When I quit thinking about my stuff, God can take care of that if I'm helping someone else. And the 11th step, it's right in the big book, pages 86 through 88. And every morning I read that, on awakening, throughout the day, and at night, we constructively review our day. I do those things daily. I'm not always conscious about, and I say this a lot, because I can read a lot, but I don't know how much is going on up here when I'm reading. There are some really good days, but there are some days that I'm just reading it. I'm just reading it to get it done. This is the checklist. It's the checklist. But from working these 12 steps, I've had a spiritual awakening as the result, as the result, not a result, the result of these steps. You know, I'm a different person today. You know, like I said, I didn't think I was going to live to see 30, and I turned 65. You know, and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams today. I really, really do. You know, I have a great job. I own my home. I have a family. I have a network of people in my life that are phenomenal. You know, I know people all over the world, you know, all over the world that are in 12-step program. And, you know, today I get really, really grateful when I speak. You know, I really get grateful because I see what I was like and I see what happened and I see what I'm like today. And I'm a person of more, let me tell you. So I want more of what I got. So I continue to do what I do one day at a time. And I don't always want to do this. You know, I just don't. You know, this morning I was like, oh shit, excuse my language. I got to speak at 7:30 today. I don't really want to do that. You know, why didn't I say yes? Well, I said yes because the sponsor told me, Tina, if somebody asks you to do service, you say yes. So people ask me to do something, I say yes. Whether I want to or not, doesn't matter what I want to do, it matters what I do. And I was told that also. Doesn't matter what you want to do, Tina, it matters what you do. You know, and I act as if a lot, you know. But, you know, once 7:30 came around, once I started seeing, you know, you guys and these little Hollywood squares, you know, I was like, okay, this is good stuff. You know, this is good stuff. You know, I see all these smiling faces and I feel connected. I feel connected. And the good news is that today, you know, when I go to bed tonight, I'm going to have had an abstinent day today, you know, and I haven't obsessed about food today. I ate my food and, you know, I had it planned last night. I send my sponsor every night my food for the next day, you know. And I just, you know, I have, like I said, I have a food plan. I follow it because basically I can't put those allergic foods in my body because once I do, all bets are off, you know. And so I want to at least do that today, you know, at least do that. You know, and some days are better than others, like I said, you know. You can have some crappy days, but let me tell you, I'm so much better than they used to be. So much better than they used to be. You know, and I have people in my life, whereas before I was such an isolator. And I can still be one. I can still be an isolator, you know, but my friends in recovery, they don't let me be an isolator. You know, I'm going to have an opportunity to go to the birthday party in LA in January. I'm really excited. I've gone several times, you know, and I'm going to see a lot of people that, you know, I hear on meetings or I see on Zoom and I get to meet them in person. It's exciting. You know, it's exciting. You know, back in the day, if I'd have thought going to a 12-step conference was going to be exciting, if somebody would have told me that, I would have told them, you're probably crazy. You know, you're probably crazy. But I go to a lot of them. You know, I go to a lot of them. So I can see like people. You know, we were like-minded people. You know, we have the same disease and we have the same solution. You know, and so today, you know, I get to be free. And what a gift. What a gift I get to be free. So with that, I'll pass. I'm so grateful that I was able to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tina, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And thank you so much for stepping up at the last minute to do service and speak when our previous speaker couldn't. Thank you.